is a way of making yourself smaller so that nobody could hurt you. How often have you heard that from people who are passive-aggressive? Passive-aggressive people have one particular thing they do. They schedule too much stuff in their lives, and they show up late. Passive-aggressive. They call it passive-aggressive because it's a way of striking out at people, and yet they can't blame you for it because, you know, you always have an excuse. The dog ate the homework. The train was late. There was traffic on the road. Passive-aggressive people are very often blaming themselves over and over again for their passive-aggressive behaviors. Oh, why didn't I make better plans? Oh, why didn't I take another road? Oh, what should I do? So one of the things about self-blame is that it prevents other people from blaming you. Because you're putting yourself down. Think about the people you know, very nice people, and they're talking badly about themselves. And let's say you have a good friend, and your friend is passive-aggressive and very nice and very sweet. They say to you, I wanted to get you that book, but I promised I would bring it over today, but I forgot it because I was tied up, and it's so horrible. And then they start flagellating themselves. They start beating themselves up. And what do you do when somebody who is passive-aggressive, who has hurt you in some passive way, what do? You make them feel better. You say to them, that's okay. It's all right. Oh, don't worry about it. No, don't worry about it. So self-punishment in front of other people is a very good way of stopping people from hitting you. But that's not the whole basis of it because, you know, one of the things that we're curious about here on The Positive Mind on WBAI with Armand DeMille, one of the things we're always curious about is, why do you do such funny things? See, there are people who go through life, they have a pretty straight life. It's kind of cause-effect, they're kind, they're nice, they don't get worried too much. And then there are people who always take the roundabout way of life. The roundabout way of life is usually the kind of thing that people who are damaged do when you grow up in childhood and you have a hard time. You try to figure out how to make life work. When you don't have parents who are loving and good teachers, you make it up yourself. So the people who are always doing funny things, the roundabouts, you might call them, they're people who have had damage. They're people who were trying in childhood, but they didn't have the kind of guidance. There's a thing called ethnic self-hatred. And that's a case where you begin to hate your own ethnicity. If you're black, you buy into the entire slave thing that took place for so many years where you were hated. And then when you begin turning it against yourself, if you're Jewish, you do the same thing. Self-loathing Jews is an expression, said self-hating blacks. You know, if you're Italian, I remember as a kid, the people who were Italians, and I was one of them, hated themselves for being Italians because they were at the low end of the totem pole. Used to deny it. Self-hatred and shame go together. It seems that a person who is self-hating, self-deprecating, is a person of low self-esteem. Funny word, self-esteem. I never liked the word esteem anyway. You know, it's, what does it mean? But it means that you really think poorly of yourself and you talk about yourself poorly. How do you get ahead in life if you really think badly of yourself? The term self-hatred can refer to either a strong dislike for oneself, one's actions, or a strong dislike or hatred for your own gender. I know women who hate all women. Your own nationality, your own sexual orientation, your own species, your own corporate group, or anything of which you may be a member. And it's kind of like you hate your identity. Now, there's personal self-hatred and self-loathing. It can result from an inferiority complex. You know, if you feel you're inferior, you hate yourself. If you look at your body and your body's not perfectly symmetrical, you hate your body. Now, why would it be that you would hate yourself if you're not beautiful? I know people who would qualify as unattractive people because their faces are asymmetrical. They would qualify. I mean, if in a, on a on a from 1 to 100, they would fall among the ones and twos as far as attractiveness go. Yet they received a certain kind of loving as a child, not an unrealistic loving. They didn't have somebody who was telling them that they were good looking when they weren't. But they developed a personality that was so beautiful, not just compensatory, that they seemed beautiful. I remember a patient who once came to me, a man who came to me. His name was David. And David told me that he would go and he would approach women. He was trying to date women. And he said to me, you know I'm an attractive man. And he would continue to talk. Now, this was a conundrum for me as a therapist because I looked at David. He was really unattractive. He was very, very thin. He had lost his hair, and his face was very asymmetrical. And I am assuming that he thought he was very good-looking because he thought he was a good-looking man. Now, how do you treat this if somebody thinks they're beautiful and they're not, you know? It's easy to treat somebody who's not beautiful, who is beautiful, but they think they're not. That's easy. Right? Someone you know talks about themselves, and they say, I'm very unattractive. But you look at them, and they're beautiful. That's easy. You can fix that one. That's reality. But someone who is unattractive, who thinks that they're beautiful, it's like somebody who thinks they're a nice person, but they're always hurting people. Or it's somebody who thinks they're generous, but they really never pick up a check. How do you deal with that when somebody thinks of themselves as much greater than they are in any one category? Well, I had to turn to David and said, David, where do you get this estimation that you're better than active, better than average attractive? And he said, my mother always told me how beautiful I was. So poor David was going through the world with this assumption that he was this beautiful man who had a right to every beautiful woman out there who just happened to reject him. He got a more realistic look at himself in a group, and people told him he was charming and lovable, but not a very attractive man. And he did very well with that. Self-injury is something that happens quite frequently. There are people who hurt themselves physically because they dislike themselves. And generally, you'll see that a lot. When you see cutting and stuff like that in people, especially in teenagers, it's really a matter of dislike of oneself. This is Armand DeMille. We're also going to be taking your calls about self-hatred today at 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. We won't be doing it. We'll be doing it very shortly tomorrow. We have a special program on this being 20 nowadays. It's called the 20-something generation. And some fascinating stuff about it. But today I want to talk about self-hatred. Self-hatred, the cause of a great deal of misery. The tantrics have long ago known that the immune system is affected easily by your awareness of yourself, by the attitude you have towards yourself. They also know that you can give up on yourself and become your own victim. That if you stay stuck in the ignorance of your self-blame and criticism, you can make yourself sick. See, there's only one sin to the tantrics, and that's sloth. Sloth, the unwillingness to make an effort. So our job, my friends, or my job, it seems to be with people, is when people are feeling safe, self-hatred and self-dislike, my job is to try to get people, to motivate people, to take care of themselves a little better. Now, think about yourself. Think about you. Here's what you say when you say you dislike yourself. This is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind on WBAI, if you just tuned in, with you Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 1 p.m. If you say, I hate me, I hate the way I am, what do you usually hate? Well, a lot of people hate their addictions. They hate their indulgences. They hate themselves for loving somebody else. They hate themselves for what they eat. They hate themselves for their compulsions. People hate not having control over their impulses. That's one. Other people just hate their own very existence. So I want to do something with you today. And today, as I said, we'll take your calls a little later. But I want to take you on a journey to kind of understand what this is like. You're an adult. You're a person who, if you listen to this program and you listen to the people on WBAI, you probably are a protective soul, meaning that you probably would protect someone if you saw them being hurt. You probably would, because most of the people on BAI are like that. They're generous. They're kind. But the following takes place. We're going to have to do this with the help of a little music because I'm about to take you on a journey. All right, so if you stick with me, here we go. Okay, so just, if you would, settle in with me. And here's the journey I want to take you on. Here's the plan today. I want you to think of yourself, and I want you to see a small you, a child you. The little you, whoever the little you is. So if your name is Tony, make it the little Tony. If your name is Jane, make it little Jane. And realize that every time you get angry at yourself, you're really being an adult who's hurting this child. See, there's a kid inside you, in almost every one of us, who was damaged and does things and doesn't understand things. And then there's a part of us, the grown-up us, which when we get angry at the way that child responds, like they get too emotional, they get too sad, they get too angry, they don't want to stay at home, they run around, they do things, we beat them up. Punish the child inside us. And by doing that, by punishing the child inside us, what does the child do? It rebels. It says, no, you won't. I'll go and do more of this. It's not the way it's going to work. Self-punishment, self-criticism, self-hatred doesn't solve the problem. So here's what I'd like you to imagine. Imagine that you look at the child inside you who has just done something that was not correct. Quit on a job, had the wrong romance, something like that. And instead of criticizing that child, imagine if you felt a tear in your eye and you looked at that child and you said, it's okay, kiddie. I know you were mad. I know you were sad. It's okay. It's okay. I'm on your side. Now, if we could get that feeling, I'm on your side, if we could get that for ourselves, if the child in you could get that message, I'm on your side, you would be so much more substantial in life. You would feel so much better about being in this world because you'd know there's a protector there. So, my friends, we're going to be taking your calls at 212-209-2900. But I want you to just take a minute in consideration of embracing that hurt kid inside you. the very music I used so many times to soothe myself when I was having my own doubts. So this is music from the 70s by Mike Oldfield from the movie The Killing Field. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're talking about disliking ourselves, self-hatred, and self-loathing. One more aspect of it. Some people have the misfortune to have been born to abusive parents who belittled them and prevented them from developing a healthy sense of self. Others are born to predispose themselves to view themselves in a negative light because of their physical appearance, a disability. Research has constantly supported the notion that it's difficult to be happy without appreciating oneself. Now, I'm not saying love yourself, but appreciating yourself. How could you not appreciate whoever you are that got this far? So here's a question. What part of yourself do you dislike? People filled with self-loathing typically imagine they dislike every part of themselves, but it's rarely, if ever, true. More commonly, if asked what specific part of yourself they dislike, they're able to say specific answers, either their physical appearance, their inability to excel academically, or at a job, or maybe their inability to accomplish their dreams. I met a beautiful man who I know yesterday. Came in and he spoke with me, and this man is just one of the finest men that you could see. He's a fine man, fine man. And he always has trouble with jobs. Yep, he gets a job, he just doesn't work out, his dreams don't work out. He was like he was born to be a shepherd or something. But he's a beautiful man. I know a few people like this who do not work in their vocation. They don't make it that on that level. And so he keeps putting himself down for that one thing. Why can't I get it? And he reads another book and reads another book and listens to someone else. It's not that that's broken, but that's not the intention. But the rest of him is wonderful. If he could carry around the fact that he's an okay guy and that his okayness is not dependent on his getting this job, it would change him significantly, which I believe is happening and it is doing. So, my friends, this is Armand DeMille. So, you know, a lot of people go to therapy. They go to psychotherapy for dealing with this self-loathing. It's not such a bad idea because in psychotherapy, something interesting happens. In psychotherapy, if you find the right therapist, you meet a person for the first time who looks at you with acceptance and approval. They look at you with a kind of a love. I mean, they're looking at the child in you. And no matter what you come in and say, no matter what you report, they're generally not judging you. Now, some therapists are not like this. Some therapists do judge you. You should drive them out of the field. I mean, it's just like there are. But the ones I know, they don't judge you. They look at you. They understand. They embrace you. Now, how is that going to help you if you're self-loathing? Well, at least one person really knows you, can love you. It's the beginning. If you could see that in a therapist's eyes, in their greeting, in their voice when they see you, if you could see that, then it helps you break away and say, well, if one person can love me, if they could love me, maybe I'll love me. Maybe I'll see. Maybe I'm okay. Hey, 212-209-2900. We've been away from the phones for a long time, so it may get a little tricky, but I'd like to take one of your calls right about now. 212-209-2900. Michael, you have anybody standing by? Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, my goodness, it's a miracle. Well, I love your show today, and I'm so happy that you're talking about self-hatred. I feel like I have been going into that place of self-hatred where I really don't like certain things about myself and I don't allow myself to be loved by others. And when you brought up the topic, I was wondering, well, how does someone work through it?
What do you hate about yourself? Tell me about it. Tell me, what do you dislike? Let's not even say hate. What do you dislike about you?
I dislike that my career isn't the way I want it. I dislike certain things about me physically, but I think more importantly, I dislike the fact that I feel my career has not worked out to where I would like it to be at this time.
Okay, so let's rephrase that. You dislike that you have not planned and achieved the goals that you would like to have achieved by this time of your life, right?
Yes.
You would prefer to be more solid, what, financially? Is it in your ethics? What is it that goes wrong with work?
I feel it's financial. I feel, this is embarrassing. I feel that when it comes to acting, there's only, I feel like the world only accepts a few, not everyone.
So you went into the theater?
Yes.
All right, now let's look at this one. Into the theater, you're looking to be one of the many, one of the thousands, who get chosen and told you're special and we're going to give you the jobs and you're going to earn a living this way.
I was looking to be successful in how I look at success, not necessarily for the world to know me, but satisfying for me, and it hasn't been satisfying for me on any level.
Because,
not financially.
Well, what's happened? What's happened? You've not gotten the jobs?
Sometimes I get work, sometimes I don't get work.
Yeah. But you stick with it.
I did for a long time.
Yeah.
I quit.
Good for you. Well, good for you quitting, because there's something about acting when you could see that you're not being grabbed right away. There's something about it that's self-punishing after a while, where you're going on interview after interview after interview, and you're not getting it. It's almost like you just keep hanging your head, you know?
Yeah.
It's great that you could also walk away from it in many ways. And then what I've seen people do who are professional actors like you are, they walk away from it, and then they volunteer their acting services in places like hospitals and places like that, and they find that they're deeply appreciated. So they keep their art, and they also do something else. But finances and the arts, tough combination in the two. Now, what would have ever made you choose the arts, right? Trying to go up and say, this is what you're talking about in life. I want you to say that I am good, is what an actor says, what a dancer says. I want you to say, to tell me I'm good. You're always searching for somebody to tell you you're good. Right?
Yeah.
You're looking for somebody to say, you're beautiful, you're entertaining, you're talented.
Yeah.
You're looking for somebody to look at you and say, you're very special. That's what drives you in that direction. So
I really don't know about that. I felt that from the moment I was born, that was the only thing that I really loved, was the theater, was the arts.
Yeah. Did you have an older sister?
I'm an only child.
Did your parents, were they both at home?
No.
That's right. Where were they?
My mother had to work. My father's non-existent.
So there was nobody to really love you?
No, but I still love the arts because I loved it.
I know, but you see what I'm saying? You spent a childhood looking for a family, looking to be loved.
Well, what does that have to do with my love for the arts? If you love something, that's what you follow. I could have said I love engineering.
No, I know. No. It's loving to try to get approval and applause. You see, that's a loving of the arts. Even if it were painting, it's the same thing. I want somebody to say I'm special. You're a kid without a family. Kids without families look for approval in the world. And they get stymied by it. But listen to what you did. Listen to your achievement. You finally got to a point where you said, wait a minute, I'm not going to do it this way anymore. I'm tired of this. I am sure you've also given up on bad relationships.
Oh, my God, how'd you know?
Yeah,
yes,
you could tell.
I'm tired of it.
Yes, absolutely. I'm tired of doing this to myself. I'm not going to get loved by anybody else unless I could find some kind of liking for myself.
Yeah.
So the two of them go together, giving up that desperate profession that keeps you trying to get the approval of a family you never had and trying to find a lover who's going to give you the approval that you never had. You know? The hell with that. It's about time somebody liked you, and it starts right here. It starts with you and me, you know? And it starts with you're shooting your goals and not saying, I've got to get all this celebration, but I've just got to get, let me get
So by. How do you get through it? How do you...
You're doing it. You're exactly doing it. You're in exactly the right place, doing exactly the right thing. You're getting through it. You're saying, okay, kitty, we're doing it together. And you're saying,
I'll have to trust you on that.
Yeah, you have to trust yourself on that one. You know, I know what you're saying. The little kid inside you is saying that to me. I got to trust you on this one. You know, I'm not sending you out to therapy. But I do think what you could do that you would love is to volunteer your acting services at some hospital or some volunteer organization that gives something to people and so they can see your real beauty.
Okay, I can do that.
Okay, what's your first name?
Camille.
Camille.
I only get through when I'm going through a life transition. That's the only time.
I got you. Well, thank you very much for getting through again, Camille.
Thank you.
It's great to talk to you. I will be speaking to you again.
Okay. Bye.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break, play you a little music. And when we come back, my friends, more of this. By special request, the drumming music. Reminds me of what the Buddhists say. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI. That's the top of the drum you're listening to. Once a narrative of worthlessness embeds itself in your mind, it becomes extraordinarily difficult to disbelieve it. Once you repeat something about yourself over and over in your mind. So if you're a child and you have someone saying to you, you're stupid, and then you hear it over and over again, you're stupid, you're stupid, you're stupid. And then every time you do something wrong, you say to yourself, you're stupid. Every time it gets repeated, it gets harder to get rid of. You ever have a friend who scratches themselves, and every time they scratch themselves, they like take off a wound or open a scab or something, and you want to remind them not to scratch themselves? Well, people who think in a self-hatred kind of way are like that. They're scratching themselves, but you can't stop them because they're hitting themselves. They're hurting themselves. So a narrative, which is just what we say to ourselves, you have to keep in mind it's only a story we tell ourselves. You're stupid. You say that to yourself. You're too lazy. You say that to yourself. You're too fat. You're too ugly. You have no motivation. You're this, you're that, and you say it to yourself over and over again. And each time you repeat it, it becomes a little more imaginarily real because the story is just a story. The problem is that we common mortals can hardly avoid deriving our self-esteem from the wrong source. So we look and we say our self-esteem is going to come from the guy who hires us for the acting job or the audience that applauds for us. We look to what in Nichiren Buddhism is termed the smaller self. The smaller self is the parts of ourself that seem better than those of others and to which we become overly attached. In other words, we ground our self-esteem and things about ourselves we perceive as unique, typically our looks, our skills, or our accomplishments. So we say, I look good today. I can guarantee you that a young man or a young woman who is strutting in their teenage days is going to have a great deal of trouble in their later adult life because they're determining things by how they look, by their skills, or by their accomplishments. But we only need to experience the loss of any one of these supportive elements to recognize the danger of relying on them. You know, you get older, and that's what happens to a lot of older people. They were great when they were younger, not so good when they're older. Looks, as we know, fade. Unwanted weight is often gained. Illness sometimes strikes, preventing us from running fast, concentrating hard, or thinking as clearly as we once did. Past accomplishments lose their ability to sustain us. You lose your hair. Now, I'm not arguing that bashing our self-esteem on our positive qualities is wrong. But we would aim to try to find our positive qualities that require no comparison to other people. We have to awaken to the essential goodness in what's called, in Buddhism, the larger self. That lies within all of us. If you want to fall in love with our lives, and by this I mean that we of the small-minded ego, we must work diligently to manifest our larger selves in our daily lives. And what that is when you compliment yourself, do not compare yourself to others. Compliment yourself with yourself. We generate the wisdom and compassion to care for others by turning ourselves piece by piece into the people we most want to be. Armand DeMille here with you with a positive mind. 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. Let's take another one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there. Hi. Hello? There. Yeah, bad cell phone quality here. You got to stand still, I think.
Okay. Are you still getting it?
I'm getting it, but you got to stand still in here. I think there's a wind somewhere. Very tough on cell phones. But okay. Let's hear.
Okay, how about now?
Now, much better.
Thank you. Is this Dr. Armand?
Just call me Armand.
Okay, yeah, I was listening to your radio station, and I never really listened to the station, but your story today really touched me. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening to you.
Yeah, I'm 49 years old, and you're talking about how we as African Americans go back to our ancestry and blame ourselves for what happened 100 years ago. Then you were touching on, I have no hair, I have a bald spot, and I make a lot of jokes, and my coworkers, they don't want to work with me because they say I joke too much and they think I'm lazy, and I just don't feel good today.
Yeah, you want people to love you. You're looking to get loved by somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's obviously true. You know, it's like you must have been a jokester as a kid too, right?
Yeah.
Did you keep your mother entertained? I bet your mother was depressed.
My mother died when I was 5 years old.
Wow. So who was taking care of you?
My grandmother.
Okay, and how did you keep her happy?
By doing everything she told me.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what, you know, that's what joking is about. That's what kidding is about. You're entertaining your grandma. You know, you had to because your mom left. Your mom died. You know, and grandma was the only one left, so you're keeping her active. And the guys around you, they see you as being lazy and joking, but they don't understand. What's your first What's your first name?
My name is Wayne.
What they don't understand is Wayne is just a kid who's looking to be loved. And he doesn't know, he doesn't know how to love himself.
Right, because one of my coworkers told me today that she wouldn't ask me to help her do work because she knew I wouldn't do a good job. And it made me feel so bad. I had to go downstairs and cry. It really hurt my feelings.
That really hurt is right. And you know, and one of the other things about you, Wayne, is they think you're tough because you joke around. They they don't know it hurts you. They don't know it hurts. You know, you might want to tell her that. If you told your coworker, you know, that really hurt when you said that. I don't know what I do to make that, generate that that belief.
Right.
But it hurt me. See, the it hurt me is kind of your secret. That's what your joking is generally about. You just don't want to feel the pain. You don't want people to know you're in pain. It makes sense.
Right, because it did hurt. And I did cry, and I did. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to express that to my coworker.
You know, well, you're a lucky man on many levels. Because one of the beauties of you, Wayne, is that you were able to feel it, and you were able to shed the tear. That's the natural course of that. That's a good thing. I know people who can't cry when they get hurt, and those folks are dangerous. So I'll vote on you anytime. You know, I'll vote for you. I mean, I'll bet on you.
You sound to hear that today, Dr. Ahmad.
Yeah, well, you sound like a really good guy, and I'm sorry that you're getting through life the way you did. Takes such a toll on you at times, but you know, I mean, you've made it a long way. You know, one day you're going to be somebody who gives a great deal to people, as I'm sure you already do.
Yeah, I just want to thank you, Dr. Ahmad, today for your radio station, for your insight.
Yeah, keep tuning into us, Wayne, okay? Go to my website, and you'll find a lot of stuff on there that'll make meaning to you. Go to thepositivemind.com, and you'll see a lot of stuff on there you like.
All right. Have a great day.
You're beautiful. Thank you. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello, Armand. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The reason why I'm calling is, you know, I generally feel positive and happy, but I can't escape that there is some kind of underlying sadness going on. What brought this out, or what reminded me of this, recently my daughter fell out of bed and got hurt, and my younger daughter said, I wish it was me that got hurt. She felt that bad for her older sister, that she wished it was her that got hurt instead. And it just struck a chord with me because I remember feeling that as a child my whole life.
Feeling what?
That I could handle pain better than the ones that I loved, and that maybe if sad things were to happen to them, I always wished it was me instead, so they wouldn't have to feel it. And I'm wondering if that, you know, if that has anything to do with this underlining sadness that I feel.
There's a quote that many of you are probably going to be bewildered by, that I wrote years ago and I posted on my wall. And it said the following: he who loves himself must hate others. Now, that's a funny phrase because we're really talking about trying to learn to love yourself, and I'll explain this all in a minute. But he who loves himself must hate others, and he who loves others must hate himself. Now, let me explain those two. The first one is, he who loves himself hates others. In a narcissistic way, the person who feels this great pride and love for themselves, very often narcissists feel a lot of disdain towards people, and they dislike people. So the person who loves themselves in a narcissistic way very frequently cannot love anybody else. There's no room. They just love themselves. And he who loves others only, and I guess this is, I'm talking about you, they give themselves away, and in a way, they wind up hating themselves. They wind up having this disdain for themselves. The very fact that you would believe that you are immune to pain, so much so that you would abandon the child inside you so that you could take care of the child inside somebody else. That's a very, very interesting perception. What's your name?
John.
John? John, so if you think about that, there's a kid inside you who feels pain, who feels a sense of loss. Now, you're telling me about a general sadness that you go around with. Sadness is always the result of a loss. So I want you to go back and go back into your childhood and tell me, what did you lose, John? What did you lose?
Well, I mean, the only thing I could think of at the moment is, you know, something that I often think about. I always felt a love from my parents. I could never say that they didn't love me, but I could honestly say that I've always felt that it wasn't genuine in the way that I guess I wanted or needed it.
You knew they loved you, but you couldn't feel it really.
Yeah.
You knew it. You knew they were loving parents.
Yeah, well, they loved me in many ways.
But they weren't. Part of them did not get this feeling through to you. You know?
Yeah.
Let me ask you something. Did your dad hug you?
Yes. I would say 50-50. It wasn't overly a hugging family, but it wasn't absent as well.
Well, I asked you about your dad specifically.
Yeah. That's how I feel about my dad. Yes, I do remember being hugged from my dad, but it wasn't often.
Okay, now, let me ask you something. Can you imagine hugging your father? Can you imagine it, hugging him?
Yes.
What does it feel like when you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess happiness,
you
comfort.
You feel the comfort, you feel the happiness? Could we say that even though I know you're defending your parents and you don't want them to be perceived as negligent or anything, but could you say you could have used more genuine hugs from your father? Could you say that? I could say that about you. You could say that about you, right?
Sure, yes, I can say that.
Okay. So this is what seems to be necessary. There's a missing part of you that's there to love yourself, but I'm going to give you an answer for this. I'm going to tell you a solution for you. And I know that you're not going to believe it, but you're going to try it, and you're going to say, wow. For you, my dear friend John, I need you to hug a tree. Yes, I mean a tree. I want you to find a tree that you could put your arms around, and I want you to hug it. I want you to hold it. I want you to give it at least 3 minutes. And during that time, I want you to imagine that you are hugging yourself, but do it with a tree. Now, I've been around this world of people for a long time. And when I meet a man like you, a man who is missing this particular thing, I could just sense the magic of the tree. Will you give this a try for me? Are you there?
I'm sorry, what was the last thing you said?
Will you give this a try for me? Will you do this? Will you try to do this?
I certainly will.
Will you call us back and report back to us or send me an email as to what your experience was? Send me an email. Go to the website, thepositivemind.com, find my email address, and send me an email, and I'll respond to you, I promise.
You want a response to how I felt after hugging the tree?
Yeah, I want you to hug a tree for a few minutes and just surrender. Mm-hmm. And there are many of you listening out there where I suggest the same thing. The very reason you love the Positive Mind radio show will make you benefit from hugging a tree, you know?
I certainly will, and thank you for taking...
John, thank you so much for calling in.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900 is our number. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello?
Hello there.
Hi. There's something that confuses me. I was wondering if you could explain it to me.
Sure.
Many times I will hear someone say, in reference to someone else, they'll be giving them a compliment and saying that they are self-deprecating. Mm-hmm. They have self-deprecating humor. And I never understood that, because how can that be a compliment, you know, to someone who's putting themselves down? I don't get that.
Well, let's think about that for a minute. Almost all comedy has two sources. I was talking to somebody who was studying clowning, and I said, so what do you do when you learn clowning? Clowning is, she said, making fun of people. So I said, and that's funny. She said, yes, people find that funny. When you make fun of people, they find it funny, okay? So now, being a comedian is criticizing the things in people that are like kind of commonplace, that are silly. And mostly when people make fun of themselves, they're not making fun of anybody else. It's self-deprecating. They're putting themselves down in a way, but they're kind of laughing at their own foibles. They're laughing at their own sensitivities. In that way, I could appreciate it, because I make fun of myself all the time. Don't you ever make fun of yourself?
Yeah, but I'm talking more specifically about when somebody says that they're complimenting them because they're self-deprecating.
Well, give me an example.
Not so much
give me
in connection with humor.
That. Give me an what? Example of that. Show me an example. Who did you ever see do that?
No, I've heard people, like, a lot of times, like, maybe I'll hear on a radio, maybe they're talking about a third person that's not there, and they'll say, oh, this person's such a wonderful person, or something like that. They're so self-deprecating. I just don't see how that's a compliment.
Geez, I don't either.
Yeah, and I hear that a lot.
You do?
Yeah.
Kind of an interesting thing. But I'm going to ask you this about yourself. Do you ever put yourself down?
In a joking way, yeah, sure.
Uh-huh. And so not
in a way that, like, I hear people compliment somebody else on.
Yeah, so when you put yourself down in a joking way, what are you saying to yourself? You're saying to this child inside you, Kitty, you made the same old mistake, and I love you for it.
Well, it's also just saying, you know, take it easy on yourself for making
exactly.
a mistake, that
exactly.
you're human, you're not perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Geez, you're a nice man. I'm glad you have that. Do you have any children yet?
No.
You're going to be a nice dad, knowing the information you know. What stops you from having a relationship at this point?
How do you know I don't have one?
I'm just guessing.
You're right, I don't.
Okay.
I don't know. I haven't met the right woman.
And what do you need her to see? Do you need her to see that you make mistakes and it's got to be okay with her? Is that what you...
No, not necessarily.
Then what would be the magic ingredient that you're looking for?
I guess a combination of a lot of things. Just somebody being, you know, a good person, nice person.
A good, nice person.
Yeah. Somebody that's not, not so screwed up.
Yeah, I understand. Somebody who could see themselves and laugh at themselves. Somebody who could see you and appreciate you and not laugh at you, but laugh with you. That's what you're kind of looking for, tenderness. You know? I wish you luck with that.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Bye.
212-209-2900. Time for one more call. Let's squeeze it in there. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I've been listening to your show for a year now, and I just want to let you know that I get a lot out of what you say. I'm very just applying things in my life is just a challenge for me.
Well, number one, thank you for listening.
You're very welcome. And like I said, the show today, for me, it seems almost as though I'm hardwired just to be negative-minded.
Sure, we get that way because we do it so often, you know. But you are listening to this program, and there is something about you that says, I want to be different, because there's a part of you that tunes in this program for a year now, and it says, no, I want to be different. So there's a part of you that's also rewiring your hardwire. Do you understand
right.
what I mean? You're a growing. You're a growing man. Yes, you're growing. What's your first name?
Dave.
Dave, I want to thank you for calling it. Unfortunately, I bit off a little more than I could chew. We're coming to the end of our program. But
okay.
The next time we have a call, I hope you're the person who calls in first.
All okay, right. Well, I'll be listening.
Thank you very much, Dave.
All right, have a good day.
Sure. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. Tomorrow, more exciting program. Tune in at 1 p.m. To learn more about past programs, you can go to WBAI.org, who keeps some of the archives, or to ThePositiveMind.com. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. This is Eric Reed.